Welcome to Unyielded, Thriving No Matter What. This podcast is for those who are committed to thriving no matter where they are on that journey. And I say journey because thriving is not about achievement. It is not a destination. It's about engagement. It's about being energized by our life. My name is Bobby Kaler, and I'm your host. And I'm so excited to be on this journey with you. I mentioned that it's a journey, and you might find yourself anywhere along that path. You may be starting out, you may be mid-career, or you may be considering your next career. You might be an entrepreneur or a salesperson, or you may be that person who just feels like something's calling to you and it's time for a change. My mission is to provide stories that inspire us so that when challenges show up, we will choose to persist. I will also provide practical skills, perspectives, and ideas that will help us create the habits of thriving and flourishing. Because at the end of the day, it is all about providing hope, knowledge, and assurance that we can all be more fulfilled and successful if we choose. Let's dive in to today's episode. My guest today is an experienced educator and collegiate administrator who specializes in volunteer management, youth development, diversity and inclusion, and relations between community members and institutions of higher learning. He holds a master's degree in higher education administration from George Washington University and a bachelor's in political science and gender studies from Indiana University, Bloomington. He has earned multiple awards and honors for his community service and commitment to educational equity, including the Kiwanis Distinguished Service and Community Service Leader Awards. His name is Chris Hooten, and I think that you will love meeting him. Chris, welcome to the show. And do you want to start with your background and your story and where you are now, and then we can kind of dive in?
Yeah, my name is Christopher Hooten. I go by Chris, and I am a college administrator working in the areas of diversity and inclusion and alumni engagement. I recently completed grad school and completed my master's in higher education administration, but I'm originally a Indiana University graduate. I graduated in 2015. I'm from Indiana. I'm born and raised in a small town. I grew up in a small town called Speedway, Indiana. So if you're familiar with the Indianapolis Motor Speedway and the big race, Indy 500 or the Brickyard 400, that's my town.
Okay.
That's my claim to fame. After I graduated from college, I decided to move with my husband to D.C., my now husband, then boyfriend, to D.C., and he pursued his master's in law at Georgetown, and I became an AmeriCorps Vista, doing community service and working at the intersection of the nonprofit sector and education access and race and equity. I found that I loved that work. I loved working in the intersection of promoting inclusion, promoting equity, trying to ensure that everyone had access to opportunities, regardless of where they came from or what background they came from. And so as somebody who grew up in a very low-income background, I knew the power of education. Mm-hmm. And that was only magnified when I went to college. And I had so much more access and so much more opportunity and so much more ability to leverage those opportunities and really take advantage of them. And I had such a great experience in college. And so, you know, when I thought about, you know, going to grad school, because I know I wanted to go to grad school to sharpen my skills and to really develop them, I kept going back to the positive experience that I had in higher education. And I knew that although I had such a great experience, for many people who share my identities or come from where I come from, college isn't always as fruitful an experience as I had. And I knew, I was familiar with some of the barriers, some of the pitfalls, and some of the issues that higher education currently has and that are available for people who come from where I come from. And so I decided to study those issues and dedicate my work and my career to trying to challenge those barriers and to provide alternative systems and programs to promote inclusion and to serve marginalized communities a little bit better. So that's why I'm excited about the work that I do. I love the work that I do. I'm grateful for the opportunity to do it.
Yeah. I bet, Chris, that it's got to be, I would think, really rewarding.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And it's also, you know, it has the benefit of knowing that I make a difference. Every morning, I do what I call work your time questions. The first question is, why is the work that I do important to me? And whose life does it impact? The second question is, who in my life, personally or professionally, is available to support me? And the third is, what am I going to focus on today? And the first question, I never have any issue answering the question. I care about community. I care about serving people. I care about people who come from where I come from. And I know, just from personal experience, that there are a lot of people that are just as intelligent as I am, just as articulate, just as ambitious, just as hardworking, just as passionate about their skills as I am, who came from where I come from and grew up from where in the communities that I grew up in, who didn't have access for whatever reason. You know, someone didn't believe in them. They didn't have a mentor that checked in on them. They didn't have support systems. No one, you know, asked them the right questions. No one supported them in the ways that I was supported. And I know from experience that it's possible to ensure that they have just as much support, just as much access, and just as much availability as I did, but it's not being done. So I thought to myself, you know, I want to be the person that was there for me when I was in high school, when I was in middle school, who saw something in myself that I didn't see in myself. And I want to see that in other people. I want to be there to support them.
Yeah. You mentioned that when we talked before, that you wanted to be that person. Can you just share, I don't know, who was one of those people for you?
Yeah. So I had a very interesting experience in undergrad. So I had a number of people who were supportive for me, but one of the people that stands out the most, his name is Vincent Isom. He is the director of the 21st Century Scholars Program at Indiana University Bloomington, where I went to undergrad. And at the time, he was my academic advisor for a program called Groups, which is a program that supports students from historically marginalized backgrounds. It allows students to come to college 6 weeks before everyone else does. It allows them to take classes to get them better acclimated to the collegiate setting. And it's really designed to support students in their social and personal development to get them acclimated to the university. And I had the privilege of being asked by Mr. Isom to serve as a peer instructor for the Atkins Living Learning Center. So the Atkins Living Learning Center is a living learning center at Indiana University Bloomington that is oriented towards the Black experience. It engages Black students. It promotes Black community building. And it's almost all Black floor in a residence hall. I had the privilege actually of being the peer instructor and teaching a college course as the instructor my first year and my second year at university. And at the time I was of course flattered and really humbled.
Yeah.
Looking back, I realized how rare of an opportunity that is. And at the time he told me, he's like, you know, this is something that usually juniors or seniors do, but he said, there's something about you that I think that you're up to the task doing this your first year. So the first semester, I was teaching college students during college, and that experience, it really opened a lot of doors for me. It really gave me an inside perspective on, I had to learn, but also be a leader on campus at the same time. And that opened a lot of doors for me and shifted my perspective from thinking that I have so much responsibility on campus. And it really gave me the belief in myself that I needed, that in the sort of confirmation that I was a leader and that I had something to add, and that my voice was valuable, and that while I was learning and while I was, you know, sort of failing forward, it gave me the indication and gave me the confirmation that there were people out there that really saw me and saw the value that I could bring. And I think that when someone sees the value in you and can show and shows you that you're capable of something that you're not even sure you're capable of, I think that it does wonders for your self-esteem. It does wonders for your perspective. And I think that it actually is the fuel for even greater things to come down the road. So I really am super, super grateful to Mr. Isom. And actually, he was one of my my references for grad school. And
nice.
So he's been a support system from the beginning, and I really appreciate him. And he and I, whenever I go back to Indiana and I go back to college, I always make a point to check in with him.
That's
cool. He's like an uncle.
Yeah. God, there's so much good stuff in there too, Chris. And when you said, when someone really sees you, you know, because I think a lot of times, I think for all of us, at some point, we have felt invisible or that we're not really being seen. And to really be seen and heard, I just think that's one of the most powerful things in the human experience.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why I love my work with alumni, but I also have opportunity working with students. And that's really my passion. Mm. I think that, you know, and the next step for me is going to be working more directly with students and really engaging them. Because they have so much light and they have so much, they have so many ideas and they have so much excitement. And I think that there's a special responsibility that comes with helping to pave the way and to support and to lift up the voices of people who are the next leaders. And you have, you know, and I think of it as an especially profound opportunity because you're really amplifying and supporting the students at a time when they don't know. They don't know their strength. They don't know their power yet. And, you know, you're really first to say, you have a lot of power. Here's how I can help you wield it. Here's how I can help you, you know, achieve your life. And I think we talked about this last time, but the reason why I am passionate about this is because I've traveled the path and I know I've experienced some of the pitfalls. And I know that sometimes it can be a little bit, it can be disempowering, or you're not sure what your power is. You're not sure what you want to do. You're not sure you're able to do it. And I think that because so many times when people like myself, you know, I'm queer. I grew up in a low-income background. You know, my father wasn't really in my life. My mother worked so many hours that it was really, you know, kind of, and I was a middle kid. So, you know, middle kid syndrome where I was pretty much me on my own, doing my own thing, reading books and things. And with the support of others, I was able to find myself and really, you know, exercise my power. And I think that I want to make sure that I do that for other people. That there's a responsibility that when you make it to the point that I made, it's very easy to sort of focus on yourself and your own development. But I find it very rewarding to invest in others.
Yeah. I think that's really powerful. And I love how you say that. It's easy to be like, okay, well, I've made it. And then, but what about, you know, what about helping others? And especially those who are on the same journey that we've been on.
Right.
You know? Wow. Now, Chris, you had said earlier, you called it the three, and I missed it, three questions. What'd you call them? The three what questions?
Work reattachment. It's very easy. And I think that it comes back to just being intentional, right? So if you sort of let life happen and sort of, you know, sort of drift through things, anything can happen, you know, you can get off track. And so for me, what I do every single morning is to start my day before I do anything, I start with work reattachment questions. And so the point of the questions is to really get you clear on three things. The first question is related to why is my work important to me and whose lives am I impacting through my work? So really it goes to the meaning of your work. The second question is who in my life, personally or professionally, do I have to be there for me, to support me? And that sort of gets to like, oh, I'm not alone in this. You know, it sort of encourages you to ask for help. And the third question is, what am I going to focus on today? And the third part is just really focused on just like being focused on something. So it helps you to get clear on the meaning of the work, which motivates you, get clear on what support systems you have available, which helps you to not feel so alone. And the third is, you know, making sure that you're motivated and you're focused. I think that if, once you're focused, once you know your meaning and once you know who's got your back, I think you're empowered. You can do it anything. You can do anything. I think that's really important.
Yep. I love that. And I love how intentional those are. Because I think too, on the one of when you just said it, who's got your back, it's also really easy sometimes to focus on the people who are like, maybe they don't have your back. I was trying to find a nice way to say it. But it's easy for them to be a distraction versus focusing on, hey, who are all the people who really want to help me?
Yeah. And I think that's actually really, really key because it sort of tees me up for my next sort of nugget of wisdom that I sort of live by. That is like the three, like sort of the formula of life, I think.
Yeah.
I'm really focused on a lot of times, I'm really focused on what is my destination? You know, what is my goal here? and you know, and really think strategically about what actions I can take that are going to get me to the outcome that I desire. So the first is just coming to reality. The number one are some things you cannot control. There are things that are outside of your control, factors mm-hmm. that no matter what you do, they're going to be, you know, there, right? So for instance, I can't change my race. I can't change my gender. I can't change my sexual orientation. I can't change my parentage or my family background or my history, right? And I don't think I would want to change those things, but it's just, you know, coming to terms with these things are not changeable, they're not movable. But the second yeah. is the choices you make, right? So like, what things do I do have control over? Right? Mm-hmm. Oh, I have control over how I, you know, my mindset. I have control over my goals. I have control over my actions. I have control over my habits, my behaviors. And the third, and this is, I think, what a lot of people focus on is their outcome, right? So for instance, and let's just use an example. So I have recently been on a weight loss journey, right? So last year, I came back from a vacation, my honeymoon, and I was very, very, I was very happy. I was very, very well fed, very excited. But I came back and I was the heaviest that I probably had been in a very long time. And I was at 285. I think I'm happy to share that because, you know, I'm a millennial. We're very, very frank about, you know, these things. Yeah. I'm happy to, you know, tell them. There's no shame in it. I was at 285. And I thought to myself, you know, this is not what I want to be, you know. And so I decided, okay, well, knowing that I have my genes, knowing that I have, you know, this is my weight. My goal was to get down to 250. And so okay. I decided to go on a weight loss journey. The second component was B, right? The second component is what actions can I take? So I started to take, and it was the pandemic, right? What are you going to do? Like, you can't go to the gym. So I was like, okay, well, I can't go to the gym. I can't go out and do races or things, but can I go for a walk every night? Can I change the way that I eat? Can I change what I buy? You know, can I drink mm-hmm. more water? Can I, you know, can I do some research and find out what, you know, what things help with weight loss? I read a book by Dr. Greger. It's called How Not to Diet. I mean, it gives you really scientific proofs wow. and scientific steps for how to change your life and shift your life. I reached my goal at 250 around, I'd say like 3 or 4 months in, and I just kept going.
That's impressive.
And now I'm down to, I think today I was at 208.
Wow.
So I've lost about, I think over 75 pounds.
Yeah.
Or about 75 pounds in that time. And I did it primarily through this formula. I was like, I know mm-hmm. there are things I cannot change. Right. I cannot change a lot of things. But my desired outcome is to get to this weight. So mm-hmm. let's focus on, this goes to your point about focusing on, you know, don't focus on those people who are challenges and people who are obstacles. You know, let's focus on the desired outcome and focusing on the desired outcome and being passionate about it and visualizing what it's going to be like to get to that point will help me to strategize what things I can do to get to that point. And there were, of course, there were plateaus along the way, right?
Of course.
Plateaus to say like, I reached 250 and I was like, okay, well, I'm at 250. I reached my goal. I was like, okay, well, but can I tweak this? Can I take this one thing out of my diet? Can I drink a little bit more water? Can I go on a little bit longer walk?
Yeah.
And see what happens. You know, and as I try different things, I kept losing my weight. That helps you to get to your goal. Now my goal is to get to like 195, which is, that's been my goal since high school.
You're close.
And I'm close and I know I'm going to get there, but it's through just focusing on the goal and focusing on the formula. You know,
yeah.
There are things you can't change. That's a given. But what can you focus on that you can control that are going to get you to your desired goal?
Yeah. You know, Chris, when you're talking about the desired outcome, it reminds me, and I always forget who says it, and I don't get the saying exactly right. So it's real, you know, this is great, but it's something like discipline is remembering what you want, you know, and that's what I think when you talk about the desired outcome, does that resonate?
Yes. Yes, yes. And focusing on, and I think that so much of our lives and so much of the people, you know, sort of our culture is focusing on what we don't like.
That's right.
And I think that there's a saying that I love, and it says, what you resist persists.
Yep. Right?
And so you know, and I'm a big believer in the intentionality of the spoken word, the intentionality of your mind, because it's worked wonders in my life. If I focus on, you know, what I don't like and what I don't want to happen, I am adding fuel to that.
Yep.
I am focusing on that. You know, I'm going to let my mind sort of, my mind will take that and sort of run with it. But I've found, at least in my personal life and in my experience, that the opposite is true. And the opposite is even more so true, is that when I focus on things that I actually like, when I sit down and I visualize what I want to happen, like, it'll help me to think about ways that I can get there. It'll help spur my creativity. You know, one thing that I do that really, really, I think is a huge part of my daily routine and helps me to stay focused and stay motivated is every single morning, I'll break down what I do every single morning because I think it's kind of important. So I've talked to my boss about, okay, I know that I'm not a morning person, so can I work from 11 to 7? Because my routine is quite extenuous. So every morning I do yoga.
Wow.
To wake myself up. I do some yoga. I also do 20 minutes of meditation. I also do some visualizations for my goals. I look at my vision board that's right in front of me. It's about 6 feet in front of me. And you know, there are things that there are pictures of people that I love. There are things that I want to do, like becoming fluent in Spanish. I've got a price. I've got a number of things that I want that are on my vision board. And I look at it and I focus on it and I visualize for about 5 to 10 minutes. But I also, you know, I brew myself some green tea. And the last thing that I do is I sit down and I write in my journal, and it's a gratitude journal. Right. So I write all the things that I'm grateful for. And in between those things that I'm grateful for, and this is sort of the trick that I've learned, is I write about things that I'm grateful for that haven't quite happened yet. Right. So I'll write,
really?
You know, yeah. So and this sort of does.
That's good.
It tricks the mind into thinking that these things have actually happened. And so, you know, for instance, you know, what's a goal that I have? Oh, well, not right now. We're in the pandemic, right? So we can't travel. But, you know, one thing that I'll write is I'm so happy and grateful now that I can travel all over the world, right? Because I love traveling. It's one of my huge passions. I can't quite do it yet, but I've tricked my mind to thinking, you know, wow, you're traveling all over the world, right? I'm so happy and grateful now that I've reached my goal weight. I'm so happy and grateful now that I, you know, have this dream job. And I love my job currently, but, you know, you can always aspire to greater things.
Yeah.
And so, but this routine that I do, it puts me on the right track and it helps me to stay focused. And there are so many things that, and I know that it works because there are so many things that have happened in the last 2 years alone that are just miraculous for me. So, you know, I've been on the weight loss journey. I've lost a tremendous amount of weight, or I don't like the phrasing lost weight. I think that it's like, you didn't lose anything. You gained your health, right? So I've gained my health. I'm in the last year.
I love that phrasing, married. By the way, of it. I love it.
So I've also achieved my master's degree, and I've completed a master's program, which I never in my wildest dream would have ever thought that I would have completed my master's degree, especially in such a reputable program, at such a great institution that I graduated from. I also got married, you know, and that was a huge thing that just would have never occurred to me. I've traveled to Asia in the last, you know, 2 years. I've rekindled my relationship with my brothers and sisters, you know, which was strained for a while after I graduated from college. I had my teeth straightened, you know, like that was a huge thing. I had Invisalign, and so, and I also had a surgery that I've wanted for a while that boosted my self-confidence. So there are a huge number of things that I have really wanted since I was in high school, basically.
Really?
And I just never had the time and the sort of the discipline. And the reason why I bring this up is because a lot of people go through sort of low points in their lives, right? And I think that it's important to frame the high points as being something that was only able to come to fruition after a lull and after a low point in my life. So I actually went through, and of course, you know, I won't name names, but I was actually working at a job previous to my current position that was really detrimental to me. It was one of those, I would say, a very negative work environment, sort of a toxic work environment, very long hours, very little gratitude, no support, you know, actually caused a number on me, you know, mentally. And it made me sort of question my self-worth and question my ability to work in the field that I was working in. And
that's horrible.
Yeah, it wasn't great. but, you know, as I always joke, my therapist is, was very happy that I went through that experience. I think I'm grateful for the experience, not because it happened, but because of what it made me, you know, it sort of support, mm-hmm. you know, sort of spurred in me. So one day I woke up and I said to myself, I don't want to be in this field. I don't want to be in this job. I don't want to feel trapped in this. So what can I do? And the same time that happened, I saw an ad for the graduate program that I completed. It's sort of a spur of the moment. I said, I'm going to grad school. I applied for it. It was the only program that I applied for.
When you know what you want, why apply with others?
Exactly. It was really a leap of faith in that regard. And I applied for it in a few weeks later, because it was a rolling admission. I was working another late night. I was actually the only person in the office because everyone else had, I was basically told not to go on a work trip, but I was working late in the office by myself, 7 o'clock at night in this office, cranking it out. And I got the email that told me that I was admitted to the program. And when I tell you that I wept and I fell down out of my chair because I felt so relieved that I didn't have to work in this environment again.
Wow.
It was amazing, actually. And I took 6 months for my own mental health and for my own worth, for my own, just to recover from that. I was only in grad school. And then I decided, you know, I actually want to go back in the field. But what was interesting is that I actually had a very interesting experience applying for the job that I had. I was so broken and so sort of didn't really feel like I know my worth that I applied for an internship position. And then they looked at my resume and said, why are you applying for an internship position? You could be doing a full-time job here. You can get tuition remission. You know, and I was like, okay, well, maybe I'll go for a coordinator position, you know, low-level coordinator position. And, you know, it'll be fine. They said, that's great and all, but you could be doing an assistant director position with your resume.
Wow.
And I said, okay, well, maybe, you know, I'll apply, but I'm really just focused on this coordinator position. Lo and behold, I didn't get the coordinator position. I thought, oh, well, if I didn't get the coordinator position, I must not be able to be getting the assistant director position. A couple of weeks later, they called me in. They actually said, we want to interview. I said, okay, great. I interviewed, they loved me. And they said at the end of it, you know, a week later, I said, you know, we love you, but we don't think this assistant director position is good for you. We think that you actually qualify for a higher position as an associate director. And I said, wow. What? And it's like, well, yeah, your resume is fantastic. You're passionate about this work and we think that you're capable. And so they really took a chance on me. And this has really instilled in me the belief that you have to know your worth. You have to challenge yourself. And you have to apply for things that you're not. I think a lot of times people from my background, we apply for things and positions and opportunities and pathways that we know for 100% that we are actually qualified for. And I think that I would challenge us and I challenge myself to think you should apply for, you be comfortable applying for positions that on paper look like they're outside of your reach, because you have to believe in and be confident in your ability to actually learn on the job and learn these skills, right? And so just being in that position is going to, although it is going to be very uncomfortable at times, although, you know, it's going to be a learning curve, you will learn so much more in this challenging environment and be comfortable with that. And I think that the last 2 years is just, it's been an absolute miracle. And I've had such, you know, so many great experiences happen. And it all came from that low point that I had where I was waking up, you know, in cold sweats, having panic attacks about Excel sheets that I didn't, I was like, did I quadruple, triple check this? and worried about what my boss was going to say and how she was going to denigrate me. And I said to myself, you know, I don't deserve this.
No.
You know, I deserve better than this. No matter what anyone says, or no matter what anyone, you know, no one deserves to be treated this way. And so I think it all came back to the idea that you have to come back. You have to sit down with yourself and say, what is it that you want?
Mm-hmm.
What is it that you actually want? And if you're not getting it, you have to be confident in your ability to say, well, I've got to go down a different path. And like, I think that you mentioned there was a man that you, Mr. Chris White, that you mentioned who, you know, you interviewed earlier and you said, he was good at his job, but he just wasn't happy. And so he decided to take a different path. And I implore people to think about that and to say to yourself, if you're not happy, if you're not fulfilled, you owe it to yourself in this one life that you're living to go down a different path. And yes, it might blow up in your face. Yes, it might not go perfectly, but you know, if you stay on this one path, you know where it's going to end. You know you will be miserable. You know you will not be happy. You know you will not be fulfilled. You have nothing to lose.
That's right.
You have everything to gain. And so I'm very, 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 very happy that I went on a leap of faith and applied for that one position with my only two references in like a weekend. I was like, let me write this recommendation letter. Let me do all this. And when I completed my graduate program, that degree, the diploma came in the mail. I thought to myself, I did that.
You did it.
I actually did that, you know, and I think that there's something to be said about setting your mind to something. And there were challenging moments, like working full time as an associate director, going to school, you know, during the night, finishing grad school during a pandemic, switching to virtual. There was a lot of challenges, especially, you know, right now with the racial injustice that was happening during the summer. You know, as a Black man and as a queer person, you know, I was affected by that, and the election that just recently happened. There's been 2020 has been quite the roller coaster. That's why I do the 2 hours of self-care in the morning, every morning, because I'm like, I need, knowing what I know, my identity is, I need to just like take some time to invest in myself. Yeah. But that's a long way of saying that the A plus B equals C, the unmovable things in life that you cannot change, plus the choices you make equal the outcome you want to have. Like if anyone is listening to this and that's the only thing that they take away from it, you know, I think that's an important thing, is that life really comes down to the choices you make in response to things you cannot change. Right?
Yeah.
So if things can't change, you're going to have to change.
Yep.
Well, and, you know, Chris, that's going to get you more likely to get there.
Yeah. God, there's so much good stuff in there. And I remember, I love that A plus B, you know, the C. Wanted to go back to something. God, there's like 5 questions I want to ask you, so I'm going to narrow it down to 1 right now anyway. You said a number of times how important it is to know your worth. And this is something I see in coaching all the time with people. It's like, I think that's really hard for people. How did you, or, you know, what would you say to someone? Like, how do they claim that? How do they know their worth, their value?
A lot of it is talking to people about what their path was, right? So I do something that I think that a lot of people, you know, if they don't do, they probably should do, and I think the number of them already do it, is that I have really relied on mentors, and what I call them actually is my board of trustees, right? So I looked at people who are in, they're 10, maybe 15 years in a career that I want to do sort of in the future, you know, down the road. Maybe they're executive directors or, you know, VPs. They share my identities. They, you know, sort of, maybe sometimes they don't share my identities, but they're working in the field that I want to work in. And I ask them for advice, right? And they're sort of my mentors. And whenever I'm hesitant about something, or I'm thinking about a new path, or I'm thinking about how to go about something, I look to them and I say, you know, how would you have dealt with this? And what I always find is that they always have advice about knowing your worth and challenging the narrative. Because I think a lot of times people tell themselves, you know, oh, well, I'm just grateful that I got the job. You know, I don't have to negotiate for a better price. Or, oh, you know, I'm just happy that I didn't get fired. I don't want to rock the boat and ask for that raise. No, you deserve that raise. You know, you've worked hard. You have gone above and beyond. You know your worth, right? And so I think that it comes down to a question I always ask myself is, if I knew my worth, what would I do in this moment?
Ooh.
Right? Like if I knew my worth, if I valued myself, what would I do in this moment?
That's brilliant.
And that has been really, thank you. That has been really, really helpful. Thinking about like, oh, you know, if I valued myself, I wouldn't shy away from asking that raise. Like, you know, and it sometimes you have to be comfortable with just being uncomfortable and sort of going, sort of bucking the trend, you know, especially people who come from my background, you know, being queer, being Black, sometimes we're taught to just, you know, don't rock the boat, take what you've been given and be very grateful. And, you know, and it's not a matter of ingratitude.
That's
right. It's a matter of, I know that I'm doing really great work. I know mm-hmm. that I have been providing this value. And also, you know, to be frank, I'm a little bit on the economically left side where I'm thinking to myself, if you're an employer, you're paying me what you're paying me because you can get more labor out of me. You can get more value out of me than you're able to pay me. And just in general, when you work at a place for a longer period of time, you're getting all these new skills, you're being challenged. They're going to add on more and more work to you. Each time, it's incumbent upon you to say, well, okay, are you going to pay me more?
Yeah.
Are you going to provide me some support? Are you going to write me a recommendation for this next job? Like, you know, even if you can't pay me more, it's incumbent upon you, right, to implore upon them, okay, I'm providing all this value for you. That's fantastic. What can you do, even if it's not a raise? What mm-hmm. can you do? Can you go on my LinkedIn and give me a reference on my LinkedIn? You know, can you connect me with some of the people that are in your network that, you know, could be potential mentors to me? Can you, you know, vouch for me or sponsor me for this conference that's coming up? Right. So I guess another thing about knowing your worth is, like, you know, it comes back to just knowing where you want to go. Right. So if I know, for instance, you know, I sort of live my life by categories of three. Right. So the first year in your job, you don't really know what you're doing. Right. You're just sort of fumbling around, hoping that nobody figures out.
You're learning.
The second year you feel confident. You can, you know, you've gotten everything down pat. You can start pulling your weight a little bit. You can start changing things. You can start pushing things out. You can start creating different systems and sort of challenging things and creating new ideas. But the third year is really, it should be focused on, at least in my view, pivoting towards your next position. And that's not necessarily going to the next, leaving the organization. It means the next position, right? So if I know I'm an associate director and I know I want to be a director one day, I should, in that third year, I should be looking at resumes. I should be looking at position descriptions. I should be looking at or having informational interviews with people who are doing that job and gaining that and say, okay, you have these skills. How did you get those skills? Or, mm-hmm. okay, you know, and partly is that if they will say, well, let's say, you know, this director position, this new job is $10,000 more than they're currently getting paid. You have put in around two and a half years in your current position, right? If you can get a $5,000 raise or even a little bit less, anything you can do to decrease the amount of money that you're going to be aiming for the next position, to decrease that difference is going to put you in a better position, right?
Yeah. So
if I get a raise, that tells people you are valuable.
Mm-hmm.
You know how to advocate for yourself, and you know how to deal with potentially difficult situations, because, you know, knowing
that
worth,
gap,
pushing for your value is not easy.
It's not.
A lot of people, they don't want to do it, and, you know, it's a matter of, well, you have to, even if they say no. Now you can turn that into an opportunity of learning. Okay, well, you said no. Why is that? Or you said no. What could I do next time to better prepare me for this? Or what can I do that'll allow me to be able to secure this next time? Because there will be a next time. So making it very clear, like, you know, and also asking, like, well, why? You know, I think that it's incumbent upon people, especially people who come from marginalized communities, to know their worth. Because if they don't know the worth, and if they're not advocating for it, people will underpay them. They're going to treat them the way that they believe that they need to be treated. And I think that, also, I think the last thing I'll say is that don't do it yourself. For a lot of people, you know, for a variety of reasons, people think that, you know, you're such a hero. You did all these things. It's like, well, no, I have a group of people that I have my crew of people who share my identities, come from where I come from, who I vibe with. And we have conversations about these things, you know, and we learn from one another. And, you know, we might go to brunch, or we might join, you know, hop on a Zoom call and say, hey, you know, I've been thinking about this, or, hey, I've been wondering about this. Who on this call has dealt with something like that? Or, you know, let's talk about, you know, this is what I was thinking, or this is what my strategy is for, you know, going into that meeting and advocating for this part of me. Are there any, you know, pitfalls? Are there any, like, you know, weak points that you want to, you know, highlight for me that we can potentially iron out these details so that I feel confident going into this meeting and advocating for this? And that's really, really helpful. You know, so knowing your worth, having a crew to get you through, to help you with these things, and also relying on mentors. And the last thing, of course, that I mentioned is, like, come back to the question of if I knew my value, if I knew my worth.
That's a great, that is a great question. That really is. And Chris, as I listen to you talk there, I love what you're saying, because it is knowing your worth, making a stand for it. And yet at the same time, what I hear is that you're also talking about having that humility to learn and seek feedback from other people. And even if you don't get the position that you wanted, to say, okay, well, how can I get it next time? I think that's really powerful, that combination of humility and knowing your worth, reaching out to others. And I love that question. If I knew my value, how would I act now? I think that's powerful. So a couple other things I want to make sure we touch on, because when we talked before, that kind of blew me away. I think it was in 2018, your grandfather passed away, and he had kind of a remarkable story. Do you mind sharing that?
And I'm glad you brought that up, actually, because one of the things that I really live by is this, the saying, this is a West African saying, and it says Sankofa. And what it means is it's okay to go back and retrieve that which was lost. And I think that for many people who come from where I come from and are part of the identities that I hold, we don't know our history and we don't know what our ancestors did and what their challenges were and how they navigated those challenges. And when my grandfather was diagnosed with cancer, I wanted to go back and record his life and ask him about his life, and in a sort of an interview, right? Sort of a, I wanted to, as my way to honor him and make sure that I sort of had the chance to get to know him, because in my experience, in the Black community, and this is me speaking from personal experience, we don't always ask our parents, hey, where did you come from? Who were you before me? Right. What were your dreams? What were your aspirations? And so my grandfather, he was the son of sharecroppers. He was born in a town called Clinton, Mississippi. This is actually, interestingly, he told me that this was the land that his enslaved ancestors had been enslaved on. So he, decades later, descended from enslaved people, he was still sharecropping cotton on the same land.
God.
And so the year, I think it was in the 1940s, his grandfather at the time was struck with a sickness that prevented his grandfather from picking the cotton and, bringing in the yield for that year. And so the family was in threat of getting even more debt, right? And not being able to really farm the land. And so as a young man, I think he was 14 years old, with him and just his, and just the women in his life who were, working domestically in the house, they couldn't pick the land. He decided that he was going to do the entire harvest that time.
Right?
And so he decided that he was going to, as a young boy, go out and do the backbreaking work of picking that cotton for months. And he did such a great job, and he harvested so much that he was actually able to go to the man who owned the land, the white man who owned the land at the time, whose land they were on. And he harvested enough to pay back the debt for the entire family. And the man looked at him and he said, the man looked at my grandfather as a young boy, and he said, I'm sorry, young man, you haven't harvested enough this time. Better luck next year, is what he said to him. Our grandfather, as a very young man, and this still blows my mind, with tears in his eyes, he said to that man, you're a liar.
Mm-hmm.
You're a cheat. And this was the 1940s Mississippi. He could have been harmed, seriously.
Oh, yeah.
For that statement. Much worse had been done for a lot less. And he cried and left the man's house. And it must have moved the man something, because the man came back a week later. And he said, I recalculated and we waited, and you're right. I'm happy to report that you've paid back the debt for your family. And here is the remainder of the money that you're owed.
Wow.
And it was enough money for my grandfather to move his entire family to Chicago during the Great Migration and later to Indianapolis, where my grandfather would go on to be one of the first Black men to work, I think it was a GM factory, I believe, in Indianapolis. He bought his own home. And to this day, although my grandfather isn't with us anymore, his home still is the most beautiful home on that block, in that street.
Wow.
And he was very well respected. And I tell this story because I tell people, if our ancestors were able to have the poise and the grace and the perseverance to navigate insurmountable odds,
mm-hmm.
I can deal with the challenges that I'm dealing with currently. Right? Like, and it is my responsibility to take the opportunity that they worked and they bled and they sweat and they sweat and they cried for, and they fought and lived and died for. I've got to do something with this opportunity. I've got to speak with people. I've got to inspire some people. I've got to open some doors. I've got to pave the way for the next generation. And, you know, my grandfather was, he was a complicated man, but it was just an amazing, amazing man. And I'm so glad and so proud to have descended from his lineage.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother was fantastic too. She moved us into a neighborhood in Speedway where we were away from everyone and everyone that she loved. And she was a single mother working a very low income job with five kids. And she moved us away into this neighborhood that was predominantly white, high income, you know, very good school, because she wanted her children to have access to school. She wanted her children to go on to go to college and to have a better chance than she did. And I'm in awe at the sacrifice.
Yeah.
Because looking back, that town, it was, you know, see, Indianapolis, Indiana is not necessarily known for being the most racially inclusive place in the world. And although it was tough growing up, I'm grateful for her for taking the opportunity and taking the chance and taking the risk and sacrificing. Because of her, I can be where I am. So, you know, I look at my degrees and, you know, and the path that I'm on, and I say, people say, oh, you've done so much. And I'm like, no, it's not me. It's we, you know, my ancestors. Mm-hmm. You know, I have just a deep, deep well of respect for them and reverence for them, because how can I not? You know, they were just such titans. They were just such titans.
Yeah.
I think about what they went through, and in the 60s and the 50s and the 40s. And I just think, my goodness, it's made going through the last 4 years bearable. The last, mm-hmm. you know, it's been a tough time in our country. And I think that I look at what they did and I say, well, I come from good stock. I come from people who have done this before.
That's right.
So I can do this now.
So much courage. So much courage in those stories, yeah. Both your grandfather and your mom. And Chris, as you were telling, it still chokes me up. I've heard this story twice now about your granddad. But this time when I was listening to it, and I had this vision of this 14-year-old young man standing up, you know, to someone who could harm him, I was thinking, and maybe it's because we were just talking about it, but talk about knowing your worth and standing for it. You know, your grandfather, he really did that, you know,
and
God.
and that's why I'm like, well, I can stand for my worth, and I can, you know, I can... I can ask for that, you know, raise, and I can demand that. And it's helped me in so many different other aspects of everything else. Like, even for things like, you know, people treat me so way, and I'm like, you know what? Actually, I have options here.
You have options.
I have a choice. I don't have to, like, this narrative, like, oh, well, you know, this is just, it's, you know, just how this is, you know, I'm just this, I'm just joking, I'm this. And it's like, well, no, I know my worth. This is what I require. This is the bare minimum of respect that you're going to give me. And if you cannot give this to me, I will no longer be a part of this situation.
Yep.
And I always say to people, you know, if you can't, if you know, I think what's the phrase that I always say is that just because somebody can't afford you doesn't mean you should go on sale. Right. Knowing your worth, if they can't afford you, don't go on sale.
Don't go on sale.
Stick to your guns.
Yep.
They're going to tell you, oh, well, you need to do this. And just, I'm like, nope. This is the requirement.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. I also like what you just said too, about when people, you know, that minimum of respect, like if that's not there, hey, no, that's fine. I'm just not going to be around. And I think that I've had to have those conversations, and those are some of the hardest conversations, but yet it's so empowering when we make a stand for ourselves. I always said it this way, and this was like in my late 20s, early 30s, I was going through some stuff. And I always thought, how can I respect myself if I let other people disrespect me?
Yes.
You can't.
Yes. You are teaching people how to treat you based on
all
what
the
you
time.
Put up with.
That's exactly right. You're always teaching people how to treat you.
And they're going to say things like, oh, you, who do you think you are? You're bougie. You're this, you're that. That's lovely. I'll be somewhere else. Excuse me for knowing my worth.
Yeah. And I even had people say to me, I just want the old Bobby back. I'm like, I'm sure you do. She was a doorman.
I've grown. Right. I've grown. I'm sorry. Like, and it's okay. It's okay. You know, it's like, and never with any animosity, never with any hatred towards them. It's like, I understand that you can't give me what I require.
Yep. And that's okay.
I understand that. And that's okay. I just will be loving you from afar.
Yep. Yep. So, Chris, one final thing I have to ask you, because you said this last time we talked. It was one of the final things we talked about. You said something like that you used to care about what people thought, but that's not happiness.
Oof, yes. My entire life was based off of fear. I mean, and this comes with just, you know, being... I grew up in a household that was very, very focused on, you know, what is everyone else going to think? You know, what about other people? What are they going to say? I was like, we're already low income. We're already beneath the bottom of the barrel. What else can they say? You know, why? And I grew up and I really shook this idea of what are people going to say? And it's like, no, what am I going to say? You know, what am I going to think?
Love that.
You can take comfort in, you know, being a part of groups of people and being in friends groups and being in communities. If you have to comport yourself and to change yourself and to become something you hate and something you don't even recognize so that you can be accepted into this community, that's not freedom. Mm-mm. That's not love. That's not where you want to be. Mm-mm. You know, you have to trust that there are going to be people out there that are going to see you as you actually are. See your worth and love you. And if they're not there yet, you're free.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what got me through this was just like looking in the mirror and saying, you're absolutely fabulous. You're brilliant. You're beautiful. You're amazing. You're intelligent. You're hardworking. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's a point. There's a bit by Tyler Perry that he says, and it's like, people are all, they will do anything to be, they will do anything to not be alone. He's like, I'd rather be in the corner with a goldfish and a puppy by myself than to be out there being something I'm not and trying to get people to love me. And I'm like, that's so true. I've seen, and maybe it's because I grew up in a community where people, everything was based on like, oh, you know, got to make sure that we're being respected in this community, that people value us, that they, you know, they respect us. And I said, well, if they don't respect me for how I show up, then this isn't the community for me.
Mm-hmm.
Then this isn't where I need to be.
Yeah.
And I decided, I was like, no, that's why I left Indiana, to be frank, is that Indiana, being a queer, progressive, Black, pretty radical person, was, you know, it was challenging navigating Indiana. And so I decided to leave. And I came to DC and I said, look at all these Black people, queer people, progressive people, hardworking people, people who, you know, are bucking the trend, and they found a way. They found success. And I couldn't have, if I didn't have the foresight and the sort of the I hate to say bravery, but, you know, to leave Indiana, to go out.
It is bravery.
Thank you. You know, to have the leap of faith to leave. None of the growth that I've had. None of it. And as much as I tell people, oh, you know, it's great. But I decided to change my environment because I knew that I was being stifled. I knew that I wasn't being respected and valued and appreciated in the way that I deserve to be. And so I decided to leave and, you know, go to an environment that was better suited to recognize my gifts. Because yes, you can change and you can, you know, you can adapt. But at the end of the day, you have skills and gifts that are just yours. And you have a personality that people will appreciate. And you have to be able to live freely. And if you're not living freely where you're currently at, it's okay. You can do what you can, you know, in the moment to survive it, but please invest in whatever you can to one day making the move that you need to make.
Mm-hmm.
You only have one life. You cannot afford to exist in a place that you can't exist. It's almost like there's someone who says, if you judge a dog's ability to swim like a fish, it will constantly question its worth.
Yeah.
I was in an environment that didn't value me and didn't respect the way I showed up in the world. And I said to myself, well, you know, there's got to be someplace else. There's got to be someplace else. And I found that someplace else. And my life has transformed tremendously. Of course, I've also done a lot of great work, but the environment really also plays a huge role.
In my opinion, there's nothing worth giving up your own authenticity for.
No.
The other thing about what you're saying there too, Chris, is what I hear is just because this other place wasn't the place for you to belong doesn't mean that there's not another place. But it takes courage to leave the existing place in order to find a new place. And that can be hard and it can be scary.
Yeah. And it's not even like, let's say, for instance, let's say it's not a physical environment. Let's say it's your family. Let's say it's your friends group. Let's say it's your college. Let's say it's your church group. If you are not thriving there, you can ask yourself, okay, well, what can I do to better comport with this community and live their values and show the way they want me to show up? And, you know, for many years in Indiana, that's what I did. You know, I was closeted. I did what I thought I had to do. You know, I changed the way that I walked. I changed the way that I talked. I, you know, everything. But that is so exhausting mentally and spiritually to have to monitor yourself and constantly be walking around on eggshells, hoping that you're not going to show peaks and cracks of who you actually are. And if you do, you're going to be ridiculed and judged harshly and marginalized. And I did that, and it was traumatic. Mm-hmm. And so I left, and I walk down the street, and I don't have to worry about anything that I worried about in Indiana. I can't put into words how freeing it is.
Yeah.
To be in a place that you don't have to constantly be doing that, monitoring yourself and questioning yourself and picking up scraps and being grateful that you didn't get, you know, harassed, or that you didn't get, you know, discriminated against, or that someone didn't yell something out of a car. You know, I think that's amazing. It's a freeing, you know, moment. And I think that I don't want to downplay and say that it's very easy. This was incredibly hard. I had to get my college degree. I had to make all the right moves to make it happen, but it's possible. It's possible.
It is possible. Yeah. God, Chris, this has been such a great conversation. I knew it. I knew it was going to be a great conversation. Quickly, if someone wants to reach out to you or learn, I don't know, more about what you're doing, what's the best way for them to do that?
So I think I the best way is, I'm not on social media, so I'm not going to go on people's, like, oh, my Instagram is this mental health, but they can email me at thehooten1@gmail.com. That's thehooten1@gmail.com. That's my email. And they can also find me on LinkedIn under Christopher Hooten.
Perfect. Perfect. And any final thoughts before we wrap up?
Tell yourself that everything's going to work out for you, because it is. You have so many scars and so many experiences that are negative, but you've survived all of them. Right? Mm-hmm. And so I think about my life and I say to myself, every single thing that you thought was going to take you out, every single thing that you worried about, every single thing that you thought you didn't know if you were going to make it out of those things, you have. You are stronger for it. And knowing that, I hope it gives people the confidence and the ability to just speak out loud what they want. Say it out loud, say it, write it down, you know, practice it. Put it, you know, whatever spiritual or emotional practice you think is important, get clear about what you want. Think about, you know, take the lay of the land and think about what actions you can take that are going to get you closer to your desired outcome. I mean, it's not simple. No one said it's going to be easy, but it is worth it. Mm-hmm. It's always worth it.
And it's possible.
And it's possible.
Yeah. Chris, that's like a perfect way to end. I love that. Yeah. I think somehow we're related because I think we share so many of the same thoughts.
Oh, I appreciate the opportunity to come here and speak a few words. And if my philosophy is always, if I can help just one person, you know, yeah. I come from the tradition of each one, teach one. Right? So mm-hmm. I can just help. If one person hears my story and thinks, you know, he's onto something a little bit, then I've done a little bit of good work.
That's right.
I really appreciate it. I'm really grateful for this opportunity, Bobby.
Oh, man. I'm so glad that you could join us. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much again.
I hope that you had a lot of great takeaways from that conversation. Here are some of my main insights. Number one, Chris has what he calls his three work reattachment questions that he asks himself every day as a way to stay connected to the work and remain engaged with it. So question number one is, why is it important? Who does it benefit? Question number two, who supports me? And question number three, what can I do today? I loved those three questions. Number two, his story highlights the value and importance of having mentors. And as he said, sometimes we need the support and the confirmation that we receive from our mentors, and that with that support from others, we can really find ourselves. I found it very powerful when he said, I want to be the person who is there for me. What a great aspirational statement that is. And what better way is there to pay it forward than to do that? Number three, really being seen is powerful. Number four, his ABC formula. A, what are the things that I cannot change about myself? B, the choices that we make. What are the things that I have control over and can change? And C, what is the desired outcome? I just thought that was a very powerful formula, and more than that, I loved the intention with which he uses it to move in the direction that he wants to go. Number five, focus on what you do want, not on what you don't want. It goes to what I heard years ago, and that is that what we resist persists. Put our attention and intention on those things that we want. Number six, I love how he approaches his gratitude journal. And I'll tell you right now, I've tried it, and I'll share with you in a minute how it's benefited me. But I love that he journals about not just those things that have happened that he's grateful for, but expressing gratitude for the things that haven't happened yet. I use this almost immediately after my conversation with Chris. As you know, I am an avid, some would maybe say rabid, cross-country skier. When the East Troublesome Fire burned through our community, one of the things that it decimated was one of our favorite Nordic centers, which is about 2 minutes from our house. And last year I was out 96 times skiing, and it was so easy to put in a day of work and jump, you know, go over there and get in a ski, and it was awesome. And it's been heartbreaking to see that it's just been destroyed to the extent that it has been. As you can imagine, having a Nordic center with beautiful cross-country ski trails 2 minutes away is a real bonus for someone who loves to ski as much as I do. After the fire went through, we didn't really know when or even if they'd be able to reopen the Nordic center. So I tried Chris's hack, and I found myself expressing gratitude for being able to once again ski my favorite trails, and for the workers who put in an immense effort to reopen the center. And it was very, very powerful. You know, instead of mourning the loss, I was reconnected to how it will feel when it is reopened. And good news, for me anyway, they're saying that they'll have it about 80% open this winter. We just need a little bit more snow. But try that hack. It really worked for me. Number seven, you have to know your worth. If you're not happy and you aren't feeling valued, you owe it to yourself to find a new path. I loved the question that Chris asks himself. If I knew my worth, what would I do in this moment? That is a powerful question, and I'm going to remember that for future use. Number 8, when people don't treat you well and with respect, you have options besides just accepting the treatment that doesn't work for you. It doesn't mean that you're bad. It doesn't mean that they're bad. It just means it's not working. And at the end of the day, we are always teaching people how to treat us. So be careful of what you tolerate. Number 9, instead of worrying about what others might say, I loved how he put it. He said, I worry about what am I going to say? That's a powerful, powerful question, right? We're the ones that have to look ourselves in the mirror every morning and every night. What am I going to say? Number 10, if you have to give up who you are to fit in, that is not love, and that is not acceptance, and that is not belonging. This is when I truly felt that Chris and I are kindred spirits. This is something that I went through in my early 30s, when I lost friends and others in my life because somehow I found the courage to stand up for who I knew myself to be. And that meant stepping outside the mold, the box that they wanted me to be in. It wasn't easy. It was hard, and it wasn't without pain. But there's absolutely no way that I could be who I am today had I stayed within the boundaries that others had set for me. And number 11, the scars that we have can give us confidence because they show us what we have already survived. This is incredibly powerful. I cannot tell you how many times in my life when I've been faced with a new challenge and I've thought to myself, hey, this challenge, it doesn't stand a chance because I have faced and I have conquered scarier and bigger challenges than this. And then I actively draw upon the confidence and the learnings from those earlier challenges. It is a powerful journaling exercise to do if you haven't done it already. But think about some of the key challenges that you have faced in your life and that you have conquered. And then write about how did you conquer them? You know, what can you take with you from that point forward? It's an incredibly, incredibly powerful exercise. I hope that you took away as much from that conversation as I did, and that you feel fueled to keep going in the direction of your goals and your dreams and towards that authentic life that is yours to have. In addition, another resource, I've created a free video guide on how we can recognize if we are falling prey to one of the biggest derailers and killers of our goals, and I call it the Just Wait Voice. This is a voice that shows up inside of us, and it keeps us stuck because it encourages us to just wait instead of taking action. I've coached thousands of people in my career, and I hate it. I hate it when I see this voice show up because it's what keeps us from taking action. And if it keeps us from taking action, it keeps us from making progress, and it keeps us from learning. So because I hate this voice so much and I've seen it so much, I've put together a free guide that will help us recognize whether or not we are falling prey to it. You can go to www.unyielded.net/goalkiller and sign up for the free guide. Again, this has been the Unyielded Podcast, where we are committed to bringing stories and guests who can help us all live more fulfilled and authentic lives. And Chris is a sterling example of that. If you have found it helpful, please consider leaving us a 5-star review on Apple and think about who you could share this with. Who would benefit from the message of hope and positivity? By doing that, you might just help someone have the very best year of their life yet.